so the key point here is that we try to construct simple wave functions. And those simple wave functions may have a different kind of
topological order or long range entanglement. That's represent a different phase of matter. And so the way we describe different wave function is using so-called the pattern for zero. We try to bring, we consider two electrons in a many-body wave function. So we have a many-body wave function, but we pick up two particles from it and ask what is the minimal relative angular momentum in the ground state of this many-body wave function. And so different wave function might have a different value. It's really like a pairing symmetry, a pairing angular momentum in BCS superconducting theory. But here we also consider the minimal angular momentum of a three particle or four particle, then we get this sequence of a minimal angular momentum. And we try using this sequence of integer to characterize different wave functions. And this is possible because in the quantum Hall state, the wave function kind of in the first along the level, apart from the Gaussian part, the wave function is a holomorphic function of this complex coordinate. So therefore, if you specify the power of zeros, you basically specify the wave function. So this is a trick we are using. And in the last lecture, we derive the condition those sequence of integer should satisfy. So SA is the sequence of the integer. So A is from 1, 2, 3, 4, etc. But S1 always equal to 0. Then we find out that for every choice of integer A, B, C, this S should satisfy this kind of inequality. And also this inequality. So S satisfies these two inequality. So basically, these two inequality totally fix the S. And it's a little bit surprising. And actually, I'm surprised. You know, I thought, oh, those conditions are very weak. So we don't get anything. But actually, we get pretty much a lot from this. So here, just list some solutions. And so here, while listing solutions, I only give a solution in this so-called occupation basis. So there is a different way to label S. And we can use an SA, or we can use the LA, or we can use the NL, you know. So here is an NL way, so it's occupation of orbital. It turns out that for every integer m, this one and followed by m minus one zero. So there's the unit cell have m orbital, and there's one particle in here. So and then this unit cell repeated. So 1 0 0 0 1 0 0 0 1 0 0. So this occupation describe a pattern of zero. Okay, and this is always a solution, and that's kind of expected. But this is a Laughlin wave function. You know, this is a filling function 1/m Laughlin wave function describes this. Then there's another sequence of solutions. It's very interesting. It's that it's only two orbitals. So the unit cell is only two orbitals. But however, the first one can be 2-0 or 3-0, can be, you know, 4-0, 5-0, 6-0. So those solutions also exist. So there's another sequence of a solution. And this sequence solution turns out to be associated with so-called the parallel fermion, Zn parallel fermion quantum Hall states. Okay. And apart from these two simple sequences, there is another solution like this one, you know. This looks strange, but this turns out also related to the Z5 parallel fermion. And so on the other hand, there's many other solutions I did not list because of the following. Suppose we have a wave function P another wave function P prime. Then certainly this two polynomial, the product of the two polynomial also gave us another polynomial P double prime. So if P prime is labeled by a sequence of zero, pattern zero, P double prime labeled by another pattern zero, so basically S and S prime. You can usually check that this product of these two wave functions gave you a third wave function, which also described by another pattern zero, which is S double prime. And S double prime is simply the sum of this pattern zero of these two. So therefore, once you have a solution, if you sum the pattern zero together, you get another solution. So those solutions are not primitive, you know. So here only lists a so-called primitive solution, which is a those solutions cannot be expressed as a sum of two other solutions. Yeah. And but you can add those solutions up and you can generate much more solutions. So here only lists the primitive solutions. And the funny thing is that seven also have many, many solutions. Like 7-0, this is a Parafermian state. But there's also two states related to the Parafermian. There's a four states we don't know. So what I mean by this is falling. So when I write down those Z7 or Z72 and et cetera, that means I know I have identified a conformal field theory. And the correlation function in this conformal field theory can indeed produce this kind of pattern zero. So that means, because here, what we have here is not very rigorous. We claim if you find the pattern zero satisfy this condition, we should have a wave function, but I'm not sure. You know, the condition we find is a necessary condition, may not be sufficient. So actually what we say is that for every polynomial, you have a pattern zero that satisfy those conditions. But however, I'm not sure what the solution of those conditions always gave you a pattern zero, which are produced by existing polynomial. We're not so sure. But in this case, at least for this seven pattern zero, we kind of confirm that, yes, we have a way to construct those polynomials using correlation function of conformal field theory. And here's the one which I don't know. And so I'm not sure whether this one really exists or not. But if it exists, I don't know what the conformal field here. I know what's going on, so we don't know. But the lesson we learned here is that at least for simple case, all the pattern zero we find are related to Zn parafermion. Those are Z5, Z4, and etc. Just all the parafermion, so they all relate to the Zn parafermion theory. But at this n equals 7 means we have a 7 particle per unit cell. This one is pretty big, complicated one. This particular pattern zero, we have not identified the conformal field theory which produce this kind of a wave function. So this we don't know. And so that's an open question. And so certainly this can go two ways. Maybe we find the conformal field theory which produce this. So this is another quantum Hall state. And which is not Zn parafermion, but something else. So I don't know what it is. And another thing is that if you show that this one really do not exist, then that means we should add some more conditions on our pattern zero theory. But how to add more conditions would be quite a challenge. So that's one can develop further. So this is basically the current situation of this approach, this pattern zero approach. So basically, is that it's not so bad, not so good. what we feel that this at least except for this the one which you don't know. So the many primitive solution, or maybe most primitive solution, correspond unique polynomial. So this primitive solution of pattern zero can really give us a wave function. So what? Well, you know, you may try to make a theory perfect, but as a physicist, I would say, okay, let's pretend it's okay. Let's go forward. And certainly one can really spend time to make mathematics better. But let's go forward. So what do you mean by go forward? So go forward is that we pretend this kind of pattern zero, those kind of data really completely describe the ground state wave function. We just pretend that. If this is true, then you're supposed to derive the many property, physical property of this wave function or this ground state from those data. So we'll see how it goes. If you can really do that, that suggests maybe this data is complete. If you couldn't do that, maybe you get some better insight or intuition why those data are not complete. Okay. So one way to making progress is to pretend everything's okay, just go forward. Let's see whether you encounter some problems, some other situations, and maybe get more hint on what's wrong with your previous theory. So here is what we try to do. And we can get many things. For example, the filling fraction. And we can get filling fraction simply because coming from the once you know this pattern zero, you know this occupation pattern in a unit cell, and then just count how many particles in how many orbits. This ratio just gave you a filling fraction. So therefore, from the sequence of a pattern zero, we certainly can get a filling fraction. Then another thing, so what is topological degeneracy on the torus? This is rather interesting thing. So what do you mean by topological degeneracy? It's a following. So if you try to put this wave function with some described pattern zero, then there's a minimum relative augmentum is all specified. Suppose you want to put this wave function on a sphere. Then ask how many linearly independent wave functions have this particular kind of pattern zero? The answer usually is a one. You only have so this pattern zero most time just give you a single wave function on a sphere. Okay. Then you can ask the following question. Suppose I want to put the same wave function with same pattern zero on a torus. The torus, the global topology are different. Then things became very interesting. Then you find when you specify the local property wave function on a torus, there may be several linearly independent many-body wave function satisfy same local property. So that all the relative augmentum have the same pattern. It's not affected. So therefore, there could be several wave functions satisfy the same local property. And that means that you can design this so-called Hodan pseudo-potential Hamiltonian that the zero energy states are degenerate on a torus, although it's not degenerate on a sphere. So then there's a question is that what is the number of zero energy states? So what is the topological degeneracy on a torus? Can you derive the degeneracy from the pattern zero? So this will be quite a non-trivial thing. You say, oh, that seems impossible. Because of the way we try to put the wave function on a torus is that putting Kolmogorov function on torus, you encounter so-called theta function. You know, theta function is a way to put the Kolmogorov function on the torus. So you try to write down the Laughlin wave function, or those pattern zero wave function on the torus using theta function. And from theta function, you try to find a way how many linearly independent theta function you have. You can put everything on the torus which satisfy the periodic boundary condition. So this pretty complicated stuff. But how can you determine this from just sequence integer? So this could be quite an amazing thing. So, and then certainly, as we say, the topological degeneracy on the torus seems related to number of quasi-particle types. And can we obtain how many quasi-particle type from this wave function? And certainly once you have quasi-particle, then there's what is their scaling dimension edge, what is the fusion energy, what is statistics, all other things coming from quasi-particle. Can you determine this quasi-particle property from this sequence? So that's basically the main topic today, basically.
Have you seen that these greater properties of quasi-particles follow from finding the topological
degeneracy? Actually, it's reverse. Actually, what we do here is that we find number of particle type. Then from there, try to infer degeneracy on the torus. And it's We don't know if it really works now, but this is kind of theory, you know, there's some magic. So most times it works. And but mathematically we don't have a connection. There's some belief, actually for the simple case this connection actually works. So without doing theta function, you can really count in the degenerate on the torus. It's pretty amazing. So there's some connection, but the connection is at the moment is not fully established, but there's some hint of some relation. And okay. So actually we'll concentrate on this. And also we'll say in the edge states, you know, quantum Hall states have edge states. You know, what is the edge state? What is edge theory? It turns out that the edge theory is one plus one dimensional theory, which is described by conformal field theory. It turns out that the conformal field theory, which generates the wave function, whose correlation generates a bulk wave function, is the same conformal field theory which describes the edge spectrum. So maybe I can explain that also. So let's say what is a quasi particle. So let's skip this. Okay, so to understand how to understand the quasi particle, let's try to view this pattern zero. From another angle. So let's consider a quantum Hall a wave function on the sphere, for example, which is a pick point. Okay. Then you ask, if I bring one particle, your electron, to this point, what is the order of zero when you do this limit? The answer is zero, because the wave function is constant. You know, if you bring electron to some point, you know, the wave function generally is non-zero. So this means S1 equal to zero. Okay. But however, if you bring two particles, 2E, both to the same point, you bring two particles to the point. Then now when you bring two particles to the point, you can say in the process, two particles getting closer and closer, then there may be zeros in the wave function. So the order of zero will be bring two particles together will be the S2. And then you can maybe you do something. Then you have S3 and et cetera. But this is exactly the pattern zero we described. That's the SA. This is the pattern zero SA we just described. But here we interpret this SA as a bring A electron to a point which have a nothing there. You know, just a pick a point in the ground state, there's nothing, no excitation, just a trivial. We'll bring A electron to a trivial point, you get this pattern SA. So in a sense, this SA actually describes a trivial particle, trivial excitation. There's nothing there. Now you can see where I'm going. Suppose we have some quasi particle of type of gamma. There's something there, there's some quasi particle. And then when you bring particle electron to this particle, then you may be extra powerful zero. And this is really suggested by our picture of a quasi particle excitation. Yeah, for example, so this is the one of a quasi particle excitation. So located at the C. So when you bring electron to the C, if you bring one electron to the C, you'll see that Z go to C, you get the first order zero. So for this particular particle, so we will call it S gamma. S gamma one. So S gamma one will be equal to one. So when you bring one electron to this quasi particle, you have power zero. And so then when you bring two electrons to the same C, then in addition to this pattern zero, these two electrons get together, get M power zero. But two electrons get to close to here, also get a two order of zero. So in this particular case, this S gamma two will be M plus two, and et cetera. So basically, for the quasi particle, you have a sequence of integer to describe quasi particles. Yeah. So this is the idea. And so we just go ahead, follow this idea. So basically that is a picture. So we can bring electron to this particle, and we get a sequence of integer which describe the quasi particle. So now we are using a sequence integer to describe quasi particle, and different sequence describe a different quasi particle, and also the sequence integer for the ground state actually corresponds to trivial particle. So this one will be one of a particle, but it's trivial. But there are other sequence describing so-called non-trivial particle. So this is the attempt. Okay, then we can just do the same thing. You know, certainly not every sequence is allowed. Only certain sequence is legal. You know, so what is legal sequence? And so we can using the similar idea. Is that now the things here is that we have a this point we also have a gamma, so there's a quasi particle here, but there are no quasi particle here, and this C have no quasi particles. Basically, we have a quasi particle fused with the A electron, so this is a quasi particle A electron bound state. This is just B electron, and we're moving C electron cluster to around this, and using a similar exactly the same idea to obtain some inequality. So the inequality will be just like this, okay. And okay, so this is inequality. And then you say, then you can solve this. So the important thing, if you look at this, is following. You can see this equation is a mixture contain SB, SC, which is a ground state property. Also contain this sequence S gamma A, which is a sequence for quasi particles. So therefore, if you're given this ground state sequence, then solving this, you can try to solve the sequence for the quasi particles. And this turns out will also pretty powerful. So here is a, let me just give you a solution. So for the Pfaffian state, so I just described for the Pfaffian states. For the Pfaffian states, so this pattern zero have this 0024 is this, occupation is this. Then we can find the quasi particle solution, which is S gamma A, by solving this equation. But certainly we can also, instead of using S gamma A, we can from S to L, from L to occupation, using this N occupation to describe this S gamma. Then it turns out that this three sequence satisfy the solution. But there's many, many other sequences also satisfy solution. Those satisfy this inequality. So you have many, many of them. But however, there's one thing is that if you say that, if you consider the sequence which are kind of a periodic for large L. So suppose in large L limit, the sequence are periodic, just all periodic. Then you find actually all the solutions only have a three kind of asymptotic behavior. So they all have same three kind of asymptotic behavior. For large L, this occupation always this. So this is a two, this is shifted, this is just a one. Actually, we mentioned this is three pattern in last lecture. But all other solution is this. From this solution, you can remove electrons. So this, you can make these two into one, make these two into one. You cannot add, you can always remove those things. When you remove those things, that's also still a solution. Yeah, they still satisfy inequality. But the important thing is that asymptotics, there are only three types of asymptotics. And this is a correspond to this topological type. So this different asymptotic behavior means there is something happen at the origin, which is not only local. It really affect the whole wave function, you know, kind of asymptotic behavior, wave function also changed. So basically, the all other solution is obtained from this solution by removing electron and et cetera. So all other solution all differ by so-called local operators. You can just add electron locally and to get other solution because the quasi particle plus electron also quasi particle. So this kind of freedom is there and it's reflect in the solution structure. So therefore, to see how many topological type, we basically see how many asymptotic behavior can we find. So that is one idea. Okay, and from here, we can get different cross-particle type. Okay. Then from here, we can also immediately get the quantum number of the quasi-particle. So you know how to get the quantum number of the charge of quasi-particle. Okay, so here I list here. Actually, you can read from here. So let me try to see how to read from this. Okay. And so to see the quantum number from this pattern, so here is the idea. First, this one have a zero, because this is a ground state. You know, this kind of occupation number means there's no actual charge. That's definition. This is our reference point. So this is a reference point. This is a ground state, no, nothing there. Okay. Then how to see this one? Okay. So let's look at this one. If you remove two, make two to zero, just remove the two, then we get a charge two excitation, not a charge two. Okay. But this charge two excitation can be viewed as a, from this pattern, I shift whole pattern two step to the right. You shift whole thing two step to the right. Then you create a hole in here. So shift the whole thing two step to the right, you create a hole of a two in the middle. Then from here you can see that this one only shifts one step to the right. So you create a hole of charge one in the middle. And that's it. So that's one way to look at. Another way to look at is falling. You know, shift the whole thing to the right. It's like threading adding 2π flux, because those are positions are angular momentum around this origin. So shifting whole thing to the right means you increase this occupation, increase the angular momentum for every occupied electron by one. So like a threading flux. And we know that the threading 2π flux always create a charge of a filling fraction. You know, if you're threading 2π flux, the charge created will be equal to filling fraction. And for this state, filling fraction equal to one, you can say occupation number on average is one particle per orbital, so filling fraction is one. So therefore, if you're shifting whole thing one step to the right, like from here to here, you create a hole here, and with this hole have a charge one. That's it.
So sorry, I got why you remove two electrons.
Yeah.
Charge
1
instead of charge
2,
I
mean,
this step.
No. If you remove 2, it's a charge 2.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then?
But the charge 2 can be viewed as a shifting whole pattern 2 step to the right.
Yeah.
So 2 step create a charge 2.
Yeah. Okay.
But this one only shifting 1 step.
Okay.
So this is charge 1 then. So that's a one way. Another way is using threading flux. It's a shifting 1 step like a threading 2π flux. And the charge will be filling fraction. And the filling fraction is a one, so this is a one, because shifting one.
What happens when you remove one electron?
Huh?
What happens when you remove two?
No, something can remove one electron, that's a charge one. But moving one electron is something new pattern, it's not the old pattern, not related to the previous one by shift. And this is one half is falling. It's a little bit weird. Again, starting from here, we only shift half electron to the right. So here two, I split these two into one part. So I only shift one of the two to here. Again, shift one of the two to here. Then we get this one. So you shift half electron. So basically you add a 2π flux, but this 2π flux only boost angular momentum with half of the electron. So you only create half of a hole. So this charge one half. So that's a way to understand this. But actually you can, I don't know whether I have a formula. Using this picture, you actually can get a formula. So once you know the sequence, so this is a LA is a, again, something derived from SA. So if once you know the sequence of L for the quasi particles, so this difference of compared to ground state. So this is basically the shift. You know, when you have quasi particle, the shift on momentum, you average this shift within the unit cell and divide by this the size of the unit cell. M is how many orbital in the unit cell, size of the unit cell. Then you get this charge. So you actually can get the formula.
What is M for
the unit cell? M is the number of a site in the unit cell. So here I'm equal to 2 because this unit cell have a 2 site, 2 orbital.
And L?
L is a difference. So so from SA we can get LA by taking this difference. This difference. So this so here the LA equal to so L1 equal to 0, 0, 0. Then this difference is 2, 2. The difference became 4, 4. So basically, this LA is this just sitting here. It's a difference of these two consecutive numbers.
Okay.
Is a so yeah. So it's just a you know there's several ways to represent this sequence integer. Sometimes this way is convenient. Sometimes that way is convenient. Here, this LA is convenient. So. But basically, the idea is what we have here is that you know all the pattern. This pattern can be viewed from this pattern as a shifting some electron to the right. You know what is the average shift of center gravity? Basically, the shift of center gravity is to give you a charge. Basically, something like that. So therefore, we obtain the number for quasi particle type. And the number of charge. So actually, for the Pfaffian state, for this filling fraction Pfaffian state, we find that there's a 3 type of quasi particle: a trivial type, and 2 non-trivial type. And this one turns out to be fermion. This one turns out to be non-abelian. This is one we discussed. This is a charge 1/2. This carry non-abelian statistics and carry this fractional vector space. A quantum dimension is a square root of 2. Okay, so this kind of state appear here. So let me just remind you, this is 1/2 state with its cast charge 1/2 state is a this what we discussed. So we say yeah we create a charge 1 state, we put this inside this anti-symmetrization symbol, and split this Kc into Kc and Kc prime. So each Kc prime correspond to charge 1/2 particle. So this way function describe 2 particle, one Kc and another Kc prime, each have a charge 1/2. And this kind of particle at Kc have a non-abelian statistics. And this is precisely the non-abelian particle we have a list here. Yeah, precisely this one. Okay, and let me see. Maybe let me see here. So what's the relation with quantum identity? You know how this asymptotic behavior, why different type of asymptotic behavior are related to the degeneracy on the torus? So actually, it's a pretty direct connection. Actually, you're using this pattern zero, you can see this connection. Because to me, that's this connection between the topological type of quasi particle and the degeneracy on torus is pretty mysterious one. But for this, in this particular concrete example, the connection is pretty straightforward. So this picture describes this. So for the pattern zero, we just describe, you know, how the electron approaching this, you know. So actually, this S gamma means that we have a quasi particle here, but the electron when approaching this quasi particle have a particular pattern zero. You may ask why you need this pattern zero. That means that you know we require this pattern zero because the electron wave function around the quasi particle would have a proper pattern zero to be have a zero energy. Remember we have this particular Hamiltonian, and the wave function have this pattern zero have a zero energy. So basically, we are describing when you modify the boundary condition at the center, then what kind of pattern zero can still give you zero energy wave function on the plane? Okay. But however, we only care pattern zero or not. We don't care whether it's a plane or some curved space. So we can do the conformal map to map a plane to the cylinder using the log z. You know, log z map plane to a cylinder. So when you map this to a cylinder, then you can see the pattern zero here still transfers the pattern zero here. So you can imagine that the pattern zero, which make this one have zero energy, also make wave function have zero energy on a cylinder. But now we have a freedom. You know, the quasi particle now is here. It's like threading the flux through the cylinder. It's kind of like that. So they have different way to construct the wave function. We have zero energy on the cylinder. So actually, this asymptotic behavior of the pattern zero really corresponds to different way to make this wave function to even have zero energy on the cylinder. But we don't care about the boundary condition. We just care the middle part, you know. And then like a different gamma corresponds to different pattern zero on the cylinder, which have zero energy, and that's give you degeneracy. So from here, there's a seems pretty direct connection. And so this mysterious relation between the topological type and the degeneracy on the cylinder in this example seems can be understood.
Say it again, if you don't get it. How do you get the degeneracy from the patterns of zero?
The things that we don't get degeneracy, we get a zero energy states. So basically, all the solution corresponds to zero energy states. But then you can map the zero energy states using the log z to the cylinder. This is also zero energy states. But however, since if you choose different gamma, you have a different zero energy states. And that's called a different zero energy state on the cylinder. And then next thing is you have jumped a little bit. As long as this is kind of periodic, you can glue these two and cylinder together to form a torus. So now you're removing this, you kind of, I don't care about the center, we just try to glue here and here together to form a torus. But however, what happened in the center, which is kind of changing the boundary condition, somehow gave you a different class of a solution. So basically, you know, this asymptotic behavior creates a different class of a solution. This different class solution survive is a log z mapping. They give you a different class solution on the torus.
But those class of solutions are degenerate on the torus?
They have zero energy because pattern zero guarantees zero energy for Hodan pseudo potential. This is the logic. And so there's a jump. Do you have other zero energy states? If you have other zero energy states, then counting this is not enough. And here we have to really say, okay, we have designed our Hamiltonian well enough. So this pattern zero only is only allowed. So there's no actual zero energy state, no accidental zero energy state. But so there's it's not totally rigorous, but there are some hint there. And so therefore this but actually, there's one thing we want to say the following, actually. So because, you know, the inequality we have here.
So can I ask you about this previous point? So the specific sequences that are not universal, let's say the ones that you pay attention to, all the actual numbers in the sequence. Can they describe edge states, for example, in the cylinder, since they will be still, you know?
Yeah, they describe edge state on the cylinder, yes. So I will go there. I'll do that.
Okay.
Yeah. And so if you look at this equation have a choice of origin. You know, there's the starting point, this zero angular momentum states. So this L equal to zero is there. And we try to solve this on this side. But this point is like a center of a disk. So we only grow outside. So this is L equal to 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, et cetera. This is 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, et cetera. So this is a kind of a picture. So we only grow here. But there's a desire to say, let's don't worry about near zero. Let's just say, worry about this part, this window, to see what is possible on this window, because we care about asymptotics. So we hope we can say that we can have a condition for the occupation on this window far away from zero. And hopefully this condition would directly give us these three asymptotics. They are all closely packed. So they all have the same feeling fraction one, but they have a slight different pattern. So this led to so-called generalized Pauli exclusion principle. So do you have a question?
So from your earlier point about the degeneracy and the
yes.
You're talking about how the degeneracy and the torus, I'm confused because the quasi-particles have energy, right? Their excitations.
Yes, and very good.
So, you know, if you have a quasi-particle, you describe the pattern of orbital momentum of the electrons around it or whatever, and then you distort that to a torus.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there are several things. First, this quasi particle is quasi whole, it have zero energy. But our quasi particle, if you add the electrons, they have finite energy. When we remove electrons, don't have finite energy. Those really have a zero energy. However, this is not important. Actually, whether particle have energy or not is not important. So whether particle have energy or not is really about the energy here. Whether you have energy bound here or not is not important. What I refer to is that the electron away from quasi particle satisfy pattern zero. So this part have a zero energy density.
So
when you translate to a cylinder, this part also have a zero energy density. We don't care about this part. This part is removed after all.
So basically you translate the cylinder and you send the energy off to infinity somewhere.
Yeah.
Close it.
Exactly. Yeah, those places is carved out. You don't have that part anymore. You glue. Most important thing is that the electron far away from quasi particle satisfy pattern zero, and this pattern zero guarantee this part have a zero energy density. And when you do conformal mapping, so this part also have zero energy density, so whole thing becomes zero energy. But the important thing is that the different choice of gamma correspond to like a different sectors. There's different sectors for electron to be far away from zero, but also have a zero energy density.
Do you run into any problems when you turn into the torus?
You have problem, but the problem is really that you have to make sure the torus should have a number of orbiting torus should be a multiple of m, this unit. If a unit cell don't match, you cannot glue them. But once the unit cell match, you can glue them. Yeah, indeed, there could be a problem. But that's not a big one. You can fix them. Okay, so here what we try to find is we want to find something replace the Pauli exclusion principle, some generalized Pauli exclusion principle, which directly determines its asymptotic behavior. And so basically, you say that first, those are bosons; those particles are bosons. So you can say we can have two particles occupy one orbital, but only two. Not three. So for this kind of pattern zero, you know, this asymptotic can be specified as we cannot have a three particle occupy one orbital. But can you have a three particle occupy two orbitals? You have two one. Is two one is allowed? No, two one is not allowed. Now from this pattern, you can see two one is not allowed. So if you look at this, because maybe I can have a Pauli exclusion principle is that every two electron, every three electron has to occupy at least a three orbit. So this you can check. This pattern satisfies this statement. Every three electron has to occupy at least three consecutive orbits, not less. They had to spread enough. And But certainly, but for two electrons can occupy one orbit. You can spin to one orbit, that's okay. But for three electrons, it has to be three orbit, not two orbit. Three electrons, two orbit is not allowed.
So why is that? Sorry.
This coming from this condition. So actually, we can rewrite this condition. So those are conditions, okay? That's in terms of S. We can rewrite this condition in terms of L. So actually, this is just rewriting these two conditions. It's the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
Just rewriting. It's some mass, you can rewrite them. But when you rewrite this way, so it's a little bit messy. It's hard to interpret it. So let's take C equal to 1. So the C is arbitrary, A is arbitrary, B is arbitrary. Let's take C equal to 1. If C equal to 1, there's only one term. There's only one term. Okay. And I should write down. If C equal to 1, let me see. This equal to this. Okay, yeah. So let's look at it. For C equal to 1, let's say it's just there's no sum, just this term equal to much bigger or equal than this term. That's C equal to 1. That's it. And then what that means, so let's look at this. Remember, C is the orbital where this particle, so L is this particle is occupied. So this L A plus K really means that, so actually K also equal to 1. So this is not important. A is arbitrary. So actually so this quantity is roughly is this one. It's just L gamma A, L gamma A plus B. And L gamma A basically means the following. That's where L gamma A, that's L gamma A. That is the eighth particle occupy this particular orbital. Then L A plus B, let me put the gamma here. And that means this B's particle, A plus B's particle, this is the eighth. This is A plus B's particle occupy this orbital. So therefore, this difference is tell you, it's kind of spread of a B plus one particle. I'm not sure what I say. So this so this condition, let me write down this anyway. So this is really L gamma A plus B minus L gamma A bigger or equal than LB actually. Because L1 U is equal to 0. So we have this relation. LB is something determined from ground states. And this is the condition. So this condition really means that the B plus 1 particle must occupy at least LB plus 1 orbit. This really means that. So that's exactly what it say. We have a B plus 1 particle must occupy LB plus 1 orbit. And this should valid for every B. And so this is like a generalized Pauli exclusion principle. But that's only the condition for C equal to 1. There's other condition which I don't know how to describe for C equal to 2, 3, and central. But usually C equal to 1 is enough. So I haven't find a situation where we have to go beyond that. So just to C equal to 1, just using this. So basically, B plus one orbital particle has to occupy LB plus one orbital.
So if you have two particles, the second particle must occupy.
So let's try that. So let's go to here. So that means three particles would occupy L3 plus one orbital. So what is L3? So L1 is this 0 minus 0, so it's 0. So L2 is this difference, is 0. So L3 is 2, is this difference. So L3 is 2. So 2 plus 1 is 3. So 3 particles occupy 3 orbitals. But then you can see that the 2 particles occupy L2 plus 1 orbitals. But L2 equal to 0. That means 2 particles can occupy 1 orbital or more. But that's no constraint, you know, at least occupy something. Similar thing, 1 particle also, that's right. But the 4 particle can say, what's a 4 particle? 4 particles should occupy L4 plus 1, but L4 is also 2. So 4 particles also can occupy 3 orbital or more. But actually, you can see this condition is satisfied. You know, a 4 particle would occupy 3 orbital or more. So this is this situation. The 4 particle occupies 3 orbital or more. Yeah. But here, the 4 particle would occupy 4 orbital. So basically what I try to say is we have this generalized Pauli exclusion principle. Then you can ask the following thing. You try to find the most packed periodic pattern. And these three is a mostly packed periodic pattern satisfying this exclusion principle. But this exclusion principle is nothing but this zero energy condition. This pattern zero, Hodan pseudo potential to give zero, that's just that. So using this, you can see this. So this way you can see more clearly. You can directly from Pauli exclusion principle to obtain the asymptotic behavior, which is topological type. Also using same picture, you can easily see that on the cylinder, this just gives the dynamics on the cylinder. Yeah.
So Charlie, there is one thing I didn't get from you said like when you take the asymptotics of the number of 1, 2, 3, 4 of the occupation,
yeah,
then you would get those three states.
Yeah, that's right. Yes. The thing is that all this pattern is a sequence of integer. It's just a pattern, yeah. a pattern zero, a sequence integer. So here we claim that this is sequence integer describe the quasi particle. Basically, remember this sequence integer is obtained by bringing a electron to the particle,
yeah,
in harmonic zero. So now you can see we have a three pattern. We have a three sequence. So it means we have a three kind of quasi particle. When you bring electron to them, they have three different behaviors.
But you don't need to put a number of electrons.
We just examine this particle. So the quasi particle has some defect in the wave function.
Yes.
We just try to probe the type of defect by bringing electron to it to see how many,
yeah,
order zero do we have. You don't need to see that because here there's a periodic thing. So actually in this case,
yeah,
maybe I think bring 0, 1, 2 will,
yeah,
be enough.
Yeah, yeah.
You can resolve all things.
Yes.
But however, there are some other more complicated quantum Hall states have a larger periodic thing. There you may need to bring more electrons,
sure,
to tell the difference. Mm-hmm. For this particular thing, I think maybe bring 0, 1, 2 is enough. No, there are some other ground states, which you, so.
You were talking about how them being
necessary,
they're quite
packed,
like the most.
So like this kind of ground state, this is a much more complicated.
Yes.
You know, if your ground state have this pattern zero, then what is quasi particle you want to bring in, you know, there's how many different type, you know. So this general Pauli exclusion principle for this one will be very complicated, but still something you can do.
And you know, when we think about the Pauli exclusion principle, we think about, you know, if we anti-symmetrize our wave function, then we get the Pauli exclusion principle.
That's right. But this is not from anti-symmetrized wave function, it's from the pattern zero. You say we require the wave function to have enough order of zero when you bring variable together. This requirement of pattern zero, this power zero, gave rise to this a generalized Pauli exclusion principle.
Is that in a sense an equivalent kind of principle?
It's equivalent to the Pauli principle. And if anti-symmetrization means the Laughlin wave function. That is
in general, you just have a
But here is not unsymmetric. Here is a symmetric. We are doing bosons.
I know, but what I mean to say is there a generalized rule which gets you your generalized polyexclusion in the same sense that their anti-symmetrization gets you the polyexclusion?
No. No, yeah, this I don't know. We don't have some kind of symmetrized, anti-symmetrized, something. This kind of a group understanding, and this really from counting power zeros. I doubt there are such things. Yeah, but that may not be a right thing to think. Yes. No. It's much more complicated than that, and so you can see I'm talking about non-Abelian statistics. I did not talk about the unitary matrix of exchanging two particles, because that is very complicated. But I talk about the fusion, the emergent degenerate ground states, and this is a more elementary feature, and this is simpler to understand. So. But later maybe we'll do that. But so far let's not talking about this exchange statistics for non-Abelian particle yet. And this is not much more complicated. And so the key point is that this generalized Pauli exclusion principle can allow us to understand that this sequence of numbers. There's a way to understand the sequence number that way. But actually, I will say, regarding to what my comment last time, is that you know, this kind of topological order, this emergent symmetry. So if I ask where this generalized Pauli exclusion principle come from, it's remember there's emergent symmetry where there's a string operator commute with Hamiltonian or something like that. So I think that's maybe more to the point. So in a two dimension, actually the ground state have a so-called Q form symmetry, and so some string operator may commute with that. So this kind of thing, and so if you derive this pattern zero from that seems a right track, yeah. And so this emergence because. As a 1D system, degeneracy of these three states are very weird. You know, here is translation, but why these two should be degenerate? So there's a very special kind of symmetry to say somehow these two are degenerate. So certainly this is totally open. So I don't know. So whether there's some way to, so rather from this symmetrization, anti-symmetrization, but from something, yeah. So your question is very, very good. So there's whether there's some deeper reason one can understand this degeneracy of this kind of pattern. Okay, so from here, you know, there's some numbers. So this is like this 128. So there's a 128 asymptotic behavior. So that's how many particle types do you have? So those wave functions are this name kind of listed in the previous table. So this power Feynman state are pretty simple. This power Feynman state, this is 2-0 or 3-0, 4-0. Those are so this is 3 we described here. The next one is a 4-5. So this is simple. But for some other states can be rather complicated. But it's something you can do. And certainly you ask, is this right? You may get the wrong thing because you can see the theory present is a wishful thinking. We are not sure it's really right or not. We think it's okay. We have a belief it's okay, but we are not really sure. Then for those simple case, actually those numbers are checked. In a sense, there is a conformal field theory. There is a conformal field theory calculation. It's a very different calculation, which can produce the same number. Yeah. So therefore, at least for some simple case, this works.
Take this power Feynman state with three quasi particles, and then you put it on a torus, and you get three degenerate ground states.
Yeah. That's right. For power Feynman wave function, you put on torus, you have a three-fold degeneracy.
So now, if you put it on a kind of a surface with bigger gender? Like, do you get three for
no,
more? You get only three.
No, you get more.
You get more?
Yeah. And this led to another very, very interesting thing. So let me just thank you for the question. So for on GNS2 Riemann surface, what do you get? You know, on GNS1, you know, for the fighting state, the degeneracy is a 3. So what is the degeneracy here? So this D1 is a 3. What's the D2? So that is the question. And this involving the fusion, which I did not discuss yet. So basically the one way to, let me see how I look at this. Why this is like a fusion? There's a way to, okay, yeah, there's a way to draw this. Anyway, so for this one, we know it's a 3 because you can see there's some flux going through this hole, and different fluxes, different quasi particles give this different degeneracy.
And for gender one,
here you can see there's a flux here, these two flux have to fuse in the middle part. And so the fusion get involved.
Okay.
So what I really try to say is that to obtain the degeneracy on the high gender Riemann surface, you not only need to know how many quasi particles do you have, you also need actual data. This actual data is a fusion, how the particle fuse together. So there is a question. Certainly, this formalism, I don't know whether one can use this formula to directly compute this. If you can do this, you will compute the fusion coefficient. I don't know. Actually, this would be very, very interesting, whether there is some very trick. You, by knowing the local property, and somehow you can glue this way. You can see we only did some very, very elementary thing to them. We only deforming thing in this way, some glue and a cut. But we can do much more sophisticated glue and cut. I don't know how to do that. But if you can do that, if you can compute this degeneracy on torus genus 2 and higher, you can compute, you actually compute the fusion coefficient completely. So this is very, very important. So this corresponds to the following thing. That's where I can use pattern 0 to compute how many particle type do we have. But can you use pattern 0 to compute the fusion coefficient, fusion of the quasi particle? And this is the answer is yes and no. We have something, but not from this idea. This idea is better. You can compute everything. We have some other idea can compute whether fusion coefficient equal to 0 or not 0. We don't know what's the value. We can just know whether 0 or not 0.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some other idea. But this is a very, very important. And from here, actually, one can immediately see the following. So let's just make one remark and we'll stop. You can see here, I asymptotic, we say this go on forever. We don't stop. But you can stop. You can consider a disk. You can say this just go somewhere and stop. It becomes zero. That's fine. That's also a solution. So this describes a droplet. And then you can start, you know, at the boundary, can you do something? So basically this is here. You know, this is where things stop. You can say we can just stop here. Then you can see, can you do something? So this equation, this Pauli principle is a generalized Pauli exclusion principle is still satisfied. Yes, you can move this tool to here. This one still satisfies the Pauli exclusion principle. That's a three particle occupy three orbital or more. But this one don't. If you move this tool to here, you get this one. This one don't. So this is not allowed.
Second one still a zero energy state?
Yeah, this is zero energy state. Because once you satisfy the generalized Pauli principle, it's a zero energy state. So you can count in the zero energy state on the edge. That's edge excitation, low energy edge excitation, by just examining the generalized Pauli principle. So this is not allowed. So there's many are not allowed, but you can just do all kind of things and find, so those are allowed things. Those are allowed things. So then when you move a particle above, you increase angular momentum by one. So this you increase angular momentum by one, by moving one particle, one orbit. So they increase angular momentum. And but there are two ways to increase angular momentum by one. Is moving these two here or moving these two here. But moving these two here is not allowed. So that's only one state. So actually, increase angular momentum by one, there's only one zero energy state. If you increase angular momentum by two, you have three states. Actually, this is a three state list by two. And all this satisfies this generalized Pauli equivalence principle. And only three, no more. So this actually is a, you can see we can, what I try to describe here is using this to describe this the zero energy state of this Pfaffian state. Remember, Pfaffian state is a zero energy state of a three-body Hamiltonian. So this is actually the spectrum of three-body Hamiltonian, which is done on a computer which costs $10,000, but only 3 megahertz. And so this, I forgot how many electrons. No, only 6 electrons on how many, I don't know, I forgot, on 20 orbits or something like that. So only 6. So those are degenerate. So basically, this is a Pfaffian wave function with a minimal angular momentum. If you reduce angular momentum, you see the energy gap. So this energy gap I'm talking about. So we say that's this wave function, three-body wave function, have energy gap. But if you increase angular momentum, you have a zero energy state. And zero energy state, this degeneracy is this 1, 1, 3 something. So there's some degeneracy pattern here. And this pattern of degeneracy can be explained by this generalized Pauli principle. It's really this pattern. And you can use this. So this pattern zero can also explain or compute this edge spectrum. And then you ask, what is the conformal field theory which produced this edge spectrum, and etc. So there's that's yet another direction to consider. Okay, yeah.
Is it always possible to move? Is it possible to get frustrated in this sort of system? Like, you want to increase the angular momentum, but you hit like an upper bound on how you can move, make local movements. Does that make sense? Like, is there.
Okay, if you have a wall somewhere here, then you certainly cannot move further. So that means you have a potential. If you move electron too far out, you may hit a potential wall. But here we'll assume there's no actual no background potential. We don't have a three body interaction. So the droplet is the zero energy state with the minimum angular momentum. But other state with zero angular momentum, but which with zero energy, but which have a higher angular momentum.
So I guess my question is like, do there exist sort of generalized Pauli equivalence principles or patterns?
Yeah.
When you perform local transformations by moving
yeah.
these things around, you can get to a place where you can't increase them.
No. Because you can always move this one to
right.
you know or indefinitely.
But is that characteristic of just
because that's you're moving this single particle away, you only make things more dilute, you know, spread out more. So this Pauli equation always satisfied even more. Yeah. Only when you try to squeeze things, you might have a danger. You can always spread things out. Yeah. But however, the little tricky thing is that you can see if you move this one to here, like it kind of like spreading things out, but it's blocked by this one. Oh, you can put this one to here. You know, I think there are some other pattern you can. Yeah, this, like this one, you can put these two to jump to here. Yeah.
It seems like you should always. It seems like you would inevitably run into some scenario where you're putting electrons in or you're pulling electrons out, where you might get a dead end in both
moves. Yeah, here you cannot. The pattern always this degenerate always increase as the m goes in line always increase, but this pattern is pretty simple. It's just a three electron, at least a three orbit, just this rule, then you produce this pattern. And so that's a and this pattern happens to be the edge state, for the for the flattening state. The nice thing about this pattern is following. This pattern cannot be explained by this mode. You know, because if you have one mode, one edge mode, edge phonon, it's less than this. And two edge mode is more than this. So this actually, from mode point of view, it has one and a half edge mode. So have this, actually this half means a Marana fermion. So actually there's a, this pattern can be produced by Marana fermion. Yeah. Okay, so maybe I will stop here, yeah. And so, you know, next week is a convergence meeting, so we don't have anything. And after next week, I don't know, I'm, you know, certainly one direction to go is we can tell more story about edge states. Another is now we can go back to the, so now we have some examples we can talk about the non-abelian statistics more carefully, but all became separate topics. So the edge states conformal theory, that's one topic. Non-abelian statistics, another topic. So maybe probably in the July, probably would I try to cover these two topics. Okay, thank you.